Now, nobody can forget the infamous House of Horrors. Fred and Rose West, between them, were charged with the serial murder of 12 young women and girls, spanning a period of over 20 years. But everyone's entitled to a fair trial, aren't they? Well, our first guest today must think so, because he acted for Rose West from 1992 to 2004, and is here to talk to us about the couple. Thanks for joining us, Leo.
Hello.
Now, it's difficult from a solicitor's point of view, I guess, but do you not ask these questions as a solicitor? Do you just do your job, or is it difficult to represent somebody like Rose West?
Well, no, actually, I found Rose West a very reasonable client. The only problem was, on the level of easy conversation, she was great. But I think the dark secrets that she held, it was very difficult to open up a dialogue and get a full picture. There was a kind of denial that she had, a denial that went all the way through the trial. And in fact, some of the admissions to things that were actually determined as her being guilty of only came out only from her own lips after she was convicted. For example, the abuse of their daughter Anne-Marie. And the fact that she was admitting that, in a way, spoke volumes about what else, you know, she was really guilty of. Although, yeah, even now, she still denies the murder of these victims.
Did she blame it all on Fred then? Did you say it was all Fred and she did nothing at all to do with it?
That's right. That's right. I think that was the strategy they adopted at an early stage. I mean, and I've no doubt that these dreadful crimes derived from Fred's weird, horrible, sadistic imagination, but Rose certainly played her part. You know, she was pliable. I think that they got together when she was very young, and you know, she was the devil's apprentice, and she was because of the abuse that she'd suffered from her father. I think there was a lot of pent up anger within her, and when that exploded, she would be capable of you know, great cruelty.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my my next questions, actually, Leo. Do you think it's nature or nurture? Were both her and Fred, did they both have very difficult childhoods?
There was intergenerational sexual abuse on both sides. And whilst that doesn't always invariably result in serial killers as the result, that was the consequence with Fred and Rose. They combined, there was a folie à deux, and the aberrant psychopathic personalities that developed as a result of the sexual abuse, you know, was vented on these, on numerous tragic young women.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, society, civilization from a very early time has had this interdiction against incest. It's a taboo. There's been a lot of research on it. It's a social construct rather than something that's hardwired at the level of biology, if you accept what Freud has to say about it, and anthropologists going back, you know, through the millennia. And that taboo was broken. It was a taboo that was broken in by Roman emperors and Egyptian pharaohs as well. And, you know, the strange thing is that as savages, humans killed, although they may have been more noble, as monarchs and despots in charge of nations, you know, people kill. And it seems that in a modern social society where the demands of the society result in people feeling inhibited and sexually repressed, they develop psychosis and perversions, as was the idea that Freud developed from his clientele in Vienna. And so this rather dreadful side of human nature permeates through, and it's rather frightening to think that there is this relationship between, you know, the power of nations and how power is exercised, and still is today. You know, you can look back to, you know, kings being and queens being beheaded, and you can look to some of the atrocities of the past, burning bishops at the stake. But in fact, around the world, people, you know, are still behaving abominably at that level. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason to draw a distinction between doing something in the name of the state and some psychopathic serial killer doing it for his own personal enjoyment. Because often with a dictator, what is in the interest of the state tends to be in a personal interest anyway.
Well, either way, in my eyes, they were monsters. And I wonder if you know or even asked why they became the monsters they did. Or as a solicitor, I'm just playing devil's advocate because I don't know what it's like to be a solicitor. Does the law not ask these questions? Do you have to represent them because that's your job?
Well, you represent people because it is your job, and you believe fundamentally that if someone's accused of something, they have the right to a fair trial. They're innocent until proved guilty.
Did you believe she was innocent?
Her initial position was that she was not guilty. There was a lot of smoke, but there was no fire. So ultimately, no, I believe she was guilty. But at the time, until there was the full disclosure and the evidence was heard at court, it was a moot point, her actual involvement. And I've no doubt that she was manipulated and groomed by Fred West from a very young age, you know, which I think is a mitigation that was lost, because they actually, in my opinion, lied about how they met. I think that Rose was much younger when they initially met. But yeah, of course, people are entitled to a fair trial. And I think Rose West got a fair trial. There was a lot of dispute about whether the publicity and the payment of witnesses made that impossible. But of course, a number of key witnesses, in particular Anne-Marie and Caroline Owen, had made their statements a long time before the matter came to trial. You know, before there could have been that invasion of the press and the media scrum. Caroline Owen had the matter against the indecent assault, in fact the rape of Caroline Earn, had been the subject of proceedings back in 1972, and that narrative was available to the prosecution. And of course Anne-Marie had made her first, she made 21 statements in all, with many pages long, and the first statement was made in child abuse proceedings that had occurred a couple of years before they started digging up the garden at Cromwell Street. So whilst it was a very valid platform for the defence to challenge the prosecution about contamination and of witnesses and inducements to give a certain story, some of the essential principal witnesses couldn't really be shaken because they were insulated by time, by preceding the media invasion. So, you know, it was a difficult case. I mean, one of the things that seems to be overlooked is the fact that Fred and Rose had lied about what had happened to Heather.
Mm.
They'd given a very elaborate account of her because of her sexual preferences, wanting to leave the home, and going off and getting involved in drugs and various florid scenarios. Well, to explain all that at length and then have the poor tragic girl's remains dug up from the back garden needed a bit of explaining before anything else anyway.
Yeah, that's of course Heather West, the daughter who was 16, I believe.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So were, because of the massive media coverage of the case, was it difficult for you, Leo? Were you vilified in any way because you were representing the person you were representing?
It was like walking on quicksand because the Attorney General, as the government's law officer, is there to protect proceedings. But the problem is, once something's out in the public domain, there's nothing you can really do about it. But I mean, I think the Contempt of Court Act of 81 works pretty well, actually, and on a working basis is probably a more effective way of dealing with contempt and protecting the integrity of proceedings than the European law. Article 6 of the European Convention on Human Rights, it lays down the same kind of safeguards, but the Contempt of Court Act seems to work well, but it has limits. And there was often I'd be making complaints and the Attorney General was saying, well, there's nothing I can do about it because it was in yesterday's paper, you know.
Mm. And did you have to, because she said she was innocent, obviously things changed throughout the trial, but did you advise her to plead not guilty then, and is that what she did?
Well, she was always adamant that she wasn't guilty, so that wasn't a difficult one. And, of course, there's always the hybrid situation, even where there's compelling evidence. And I'd say in this case, there was a lot of smoke. There was no fire. The Crown would accept that no one could say that they saw Rose West kill anybody. But they relied on a similar fact evidence, a system of striking similarity between what happened to victims that survived, who had been abducted and gagged with tape and sexually abused, with the condition of the remains found that were likewise gagged with tape and had been bound, you know?
Mm.
So there was that circuit. It was a circumstantial case. But even then, there are the hybrid cases where someone might be guilty of something, but not as charged. You know, they might be guilty of sexual abuse. They might be guilty of rape. There might be an element of manslaughter. They might have assisted in some way in disposing of a body. But all of those offences fall short of murder.
Right.
So, and so there's always, and as our junior counsel used to say to Rose, look, you might have done this, you might have prostituted yourself, you might have abused your children, you might have got angry, you might have been involved in deviant sex, sadomasochism, but none of that makes you guilty of murder. And one of the problems with Rose was that she would clam up on all of it. She didn't want to go there. She didn't want to become this three-dimensional person who actually could do bad things. So by taking that position of being squeaky clean, almost in denial, almost juvenile about it, I think that it didn't help her cause as a witness when the matter came to trial.
Well, she was, of course, convicted in 1995 of 10 murders after a lengthy trial at Winchester Crown Court and is serving a life sentence in Durham Prison. Did you ever represent Fred West, Leo?
I did represent the pair of them in child care proceedings that proceeded for a while. There had been, initially, there was the allegation of child abuse, and that triggered child abuse criminal proceedings and also child care proceedings. Those child sex abuse criminal proceedings were discontinued when the children refused to give evidence against their parents. But the child care proceedings continued, and at that stage I remained acting for both of them through from about May 93 until they started digging the garden in February 94.
Mm. And he, Fred West, committed suicide whilst awaiting trial. How did she react to that? Presumably you were in conversations with her at that time.
Yeah, it was New Year's Day of 1995. It was also my wedding anniversary. And Alan Smith of the Press Association phoned me at about 1:30. So he must have got hold of that information within about 20 minutes or something of Fred being found hanging in his cell. And he said, you know, had I heard anything? And I said, well, no. But anyway, when it was confirmed, I drove over to Puckle Church, where Rose was on remand at the time, and discussed this. And she was conflicted in her manner. There was a kind of almost excitement that, you know, somehow this was going to change things in her favour and she'd be off the hook. And in fact, a lot of eminent lawyers were saying that the matter should be discontinued, including Lord Denning, I believe. But Barbara Mills, the DPP, took a different view and decided that not only was Rose going to, the trial was going to proceed against Rose in relation to the nine, they added the count of, a tenth count relating to Charmaine, the little girl who Fred had acquired when he married Rena Costello, his first wife. So she was conflicted. There was that kind of excitement, but also I think there was a welling up inside her. I think there was a shock, but she didn't want to show it. She certainly didn't burst into tears.
Do you think did love him then, really?
Well, she expressed love for him in a number of letters, and it was all quite gushing, lovey-dovey stuff in the early days. But then Fred would talk about love both, you know, he would write it down in letters from prison or whatever in his rather illiterate manner, and he would also talk of love. I mean, during his interviews about the murders, his interviews are liberally laced with making love. And one does wonder what he really meant by love, because love and murder seem to go together, dovetail very well for Fred West.
And talking of love, I don't know whether you can answer this question, but it was massively in the media that she had a lesbian relationship with Myra Hindley. Do you know if that's true?
Well, I can't say that I looked into a cell and they were, her and Myra Hindley were kissing and cadooling. I do know they were friends for a brief while.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. And my understanding was that it was more than just a platonic friendship. But on the basis of other sources and what Rose tell me, it's my belief that it was a very brief relationship, because on the one hand, they were in hospital together because Myra Hindley was in the hospital wing because she'd fallen over in the exercise yard and she had brittle bones and was constantly breaking legs. Rose, once she was convicted, she had to be admitted as a prisoner rather than a remand prisoner, and she was being assessed. And so the two of them were on the hospital wing, and they'd gone on okay, and Rose was quite impressed with Myra's knowledge. But she said, you know, I want to see how we get on. Let's see how we get on. And the next time I visited, a couple of months later, she definitely distanced herself from Myra Hindley and said she was a dangerous one, she was manipulative, she was, you know, taking her for a proverbial, I won't use the word.
I think we know what you mean.
So, you know, there was a certain intensity in her emotions about it that would suggest that, you know, that in itself suggests that there had been a sort of intense kind of feelings that were brief, but in the general scheme of my book, it isn't actually a particularly significant issue. I suppose it's because of the demonization of two women through criminal history in the 20th century. I suppose they have quite prominent positions. So the fact that they might have at one time been very friendly with each other, I suppose has some sort of public interest. But yes. I don't think it adds much to the dialogue about the case, really.
Yeah. Well, you stopped acting for her in 2004. Did you ever speak with her again? Did you have any contact with her?
Not since then, no. No, I haven't.
Do you know?
Sorry.
I was just going to say, at that point, did she want to be released, or do you think she's quite happy in prison?
So she reached this strange kind of. I didn't understand it. On the one hand, she was saying she decided to make a life in prison. She had no wish to come out of prison, and in a sense, it was what she said was sensible and rational, that her life outside prison would be impossible. You know, she'd be running from the lynch mob. She wouldn't know where to live. She'd be constantly on the run. Her family's lives would be miserable. And that she saw her future in prison. I think that she had said that she'd benefited from some counselling that she'd found valuable. So she was kind of realistic about her position. Does this mean that you're admitting the offences? And she said, oh, no, not at all. So, strange position, but that's where we left it.
Yeah, of course. Well, she's now 65, and your book, which is called Understanding Fred and Rose West, is published ahead of the 25th anniversary of Fred's prison suicide. It's based on 12 years of letters, interviews and visits with her. It must be a very thick book. You must have travelled up and down to Durham quite a lot.
Well, the first point is, as I've said, that Rose played her cards very close to her chest. And so I haven't, apart from stuff that's already out there, I haven't published personal letters. All I've given an indication of the tenor of those letters in order to develop arguments about the sort of person. I think the questions that I had over the years, and I think a lot of people, was why did this happen? What sort of people were they? What events in their lives led them to have these feelings that they could do that and keep doing that? Mm. And so kind of smokescreen letters, unless there is something that really sheds a light, doesn't necessarily help. But yes, I visited Rose an awful lot, and she did write to me a lot, and she wrote some very fond letters to me, which are quite gratuitous, and I don't think that publishing them would do any good, you know, just her telling me what a great guy I am, you know. Mm. Nobody really wants to hear that. They want to know about Rose, don't they?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I just wanted to finish with a final question, Leo. Do you have any regrets about representing her?
Not really. In fact, the only thing is, I mean, my family stayed together. You know, we're a big, strong family. There was a time I went through various phases where I was probably in denial about what it was doing to the relationships within the family. And it's only in recent years, my wife's reminded me of what a miserable individual I was at that time and difficult to live with and almost leading my own life. Because I always assumed that, everything carried on as normal. So I wasn't really aware of that. And also my eldest daughter, who's now a doctor of psychology, you know, she said that she thought I was awful at the time, and it was a very difficult time for her. And she seems to be impacted by it more than her younger siblings, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine it was a difficult time for you all for those 12 years. The book is called Understanding Fred and Rose West. It's by Leo Samuel Goatley, who we're speaking to now. And I believe it came out yesterday, Leo.
Yes, it was published yesterday. So it's with all good booksellers, Waterstones, Foyles, Blackwell, W.H. Smith. It's with Amazon as well.
It's also on the TRE website. We have our own bookshop.
Oh, great.
So people can buy it direct from there.
Right. Well, hopefully there's plenty they'll find of interest in it. I mean, it's immersive, it's visceral at times, it takes you out of your comfort zone, but it deals in a realistic and up-close personal way with the really dreadful matters that happened. It isn't the account of an informed bystander standing on the sideline. You know, it's much more immersive than that.
Yes,
of course. And I hope that it's an interesting read for people who enjoy that kind of genre.
Well, Leo, thank you for sharing some of it on our show today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.